The reading is from John chapter 18, beginning at verse 19. Meanwhile, the high priest questioned Jesus about his disciples and his teaching. "I have spoken openly to the world," Jesus replied. "I always taught in synagogues or at the temple, where all the Jews come together. I said nothing in secret. Why question me? Ask those who heard me. Surely they know what I said." When Jesus said this, one of the officials nearby struck him in the face. "Is that the way you answer the high priest?" he demanded. "If I said something wrong," Jesus replied, "testify as to what is wrong. But if I spoke the truth, why did you strike me?" Then Annas sent him, still bound, to Caiaphas, the high priest. Then the Jews led Jesus from Caiaphas to the palace of the Roman governor. By now it was early morning, and to avoid ceremonial uncleanness, the Jews did not enter the palace. They wanted to be able to eat the Passover. So Pilate came out to them and asked, "What charges are you bringing against this man?" "If he were not a criminal," they replied, "we would not have handed him over to you." Pilate said, "Take him yourselves and judge him by your own law." "But we have no right to execute anyone," the Jews objected. This happened so that the words of Jesus had spoken, indicating the kind of death he was going to die, would be fulfilled. Pilate then went back inside the palace, summoned Jesus and asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" "Is that your own idea?" Jesus asked, "or did others talk to you about me?" "Am I a Jew?" Pilate replied. "It was your people and your chief priests who handed you over to me. What is it you have done?" Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jews. But now my kingdom is from another place." "You are a king then," said Pilate. Jesus answered, "You're right in saying I am a king. In fact, for this reason I was born, and for this I came into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me." "What is truth?" Pilate asked. With this, he went out again to the Jews and said, "I find no basis for a charge against him. But it is your custom for me to release to you one prisoner at the time of the Passover. Do you want me to release the king of the Jews?" They shouted back, "No, not him. Give us Barabbas." Now Barabbas had taken part in a rebellion. Then Pilate took Jesus and had him flogged. The soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and put it on his head. They clothed him in a purple robe and went up to him again and again, saying, "Hail, King of the Jews!" And they struck him in the face. Once more Pilate came out and said to the Jews, "Look, I am bringing him out to you to let you know that I find no basis for a charge against him." When Jesus came out, wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, Pilate said to them, "Here is the man." As soon as the chief priests and their officials saw him, they shouted, "Crucify! Crucify!" But Pilate answered, "You take him and crucify him. As for me, I find no basis for a charge against him." The Jews insisted, "We have a law, and according to that law, he must die, because he claimed to be the Son of God." When Pilate heard this, he was even more afraid, and he went back inside the palace. "Where do you come from?" he asked Jesus. But Jesus gave him no answer. "Do you refuse to speak to me?" Pilate said. "Don't you realize I have power either to free you or to crucify you?" Jesus answered, "You would have no power over me if it were not given to you from above. Therefore, the one who handed me over to you is guilty of a greater sin." From then on, Pilate tried to set Jesus free, but the Jews kept shouting, "If you let this man go, you are no friend of Caesar. Anyone who claims to be a king opposes Caesar." When Pilate heard this, he brought Jesus out and sat down on the judge's seat at a place known as the stone pavement, which in Aramaic is Gabbatha. It was the day of preparation of Passover week, about the sixth hour. "Here is your king," Pilate said to the Jews. But they shouted, "Take him away! Take him away! Crucify him!" "Shall I crucify your king?" Pilate asked. "We have no king but Caesar," the chief priests answered. Finally, Pilate handed him over to them to be crucified.
Okay, John is giving us evidence for what he believes in the gospel. What he believes is in chapter 1, verses 1 to 18. You've done all this before, for those of you who've been here. For those of you who haven't been here, a quick recap. Quick, honestly. Right. Chapter 1, verses 1 to 18 is John proclaiming, "This is what I believe about Jesus." It's very short, but it's very succinct, and it's brilliant as a piece of theology. And in that thing, he says, Jesus is God. He makes this claim. So that's what he says. The rest of the gospel is his evidence. This is why I believe these strange things about a man, Jesus. John is not a man who can be persuaded easily. His Jewish background and his integrity won't allow him to make casual claims. He's been with Jesus for at least 3 years and probably knew him before that. He'd been taught truth delivered in love comes before all things. When you are working with God, truth delivered in love comes before everything. It's not just good enough to be loving people. It's got to have truth behind it. We can't love people and just let them go. Truth delivered in love. Sometimes we deliver truth without love, and the church can be a horrible place when that happens. And sometimes we deliver love without truth, and we give people a false sense of hope and security. But Jesus taught truth delivered in love. And in his claim, John says, Jesus is God. In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The Word became flesh and dwelt amongst us. Jesus is God. And all the people around are going, "What do you mean?" He says, "Well, here's my evidence." And he uses this section of the Bible, chapters 18 and 19, to deal with that. So why did John say that Jesus is God? And yet he doesn't use the virgin birth. He doesn't use the Mount of Transfiguration. They're not in John's gospel. He uses Jesus' trial and death to say, "You know what? I believe Jesus is God. Because throughout his encounter, throughout everything that happened, he was in control. Not the Romans, not the chief priests, he was." So let me try and explain something about the situation. The situation was this. There was the position of the chief priests. A chief priest was someone who inherited both ancestry and qualifications and you know, they had to be there. And I need a chief priest. Can someone come and be a chief priest for me? Okay, Freddie, you be the chief priest. All right, I need an older one. Okay, an older chief priest. Here you go. It's got to be you, isn't it? You're Annas, okay? Chief priest, come on out there. So here he is. This is Annas. He is a very well-respected man. Okay? Thank you. He's a very well-respected man. Okay? In fact, you should be standing in his presence. Okay? Up you get. Come on. Stand in his presence. Thank you. Well, respected, you sit down again now. All right.
Thanks, Ron.
Okay. This man, it was the chief priest, and it's a lifelong job. You had it until you died, a bit like the Pope and so forth. That's where I think they got the idea from. So this man was Annas, and he was chosen because he had the right family, he had the right education, he had the right connections. And when they decided that the chief priest needed to be elected, he had the vote of the Sanhedrin as well. He was God's appointed man. Unfortunately, he had to work in occupied territory. And the Romans were around. So there was Annas, and he was surrounded by the Sanhedrin. And for that, I need a couple of grumpy old men. Okay. Okay. I need some grumpy old men. Oh, Lloyd. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there you go. Right, we'll give you... Okay. So, there's usually a couple of these, but you'll do. Okay, there's quite a few of them. And the Sanhedrin watched his back, all right? So you could hear. And they were very careful, okay, to make sure that he did the right things, okay? So they were sort of a bit like... a bit like grumpy deacons, okay? But the Romans were around. And it wasn't just one Roman. You see, when we think of Romans, we think of, a few people. So, obviously, there was Pontius Pilate. I need a Roman now. Ooh. Come on, George, you can come be a Pontius Pilate. You were a local...
Got the nose for it.
You've got the nose for it. Okay, right. So, and George... There you go. You got a little crown on your head. Okay. Lovely. There you go. A little crown on your head. All right. He was the local governor, the prefect. Okay. So you could sit on that chair there. Okay. He was the small fry. Because Romans didn't do things by just sort of having one governor. No, 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 no. He had to report to somebody else. There was a governor over the region, Matthew. All right? You are the regional governor. You've got a bit more pomp and circumstance, okay? You go on the bigger throne, and you get the bigger crown. There you go, okay? Regional king. They actually called you king at one point. Don't let your hat fall off. Okay. So there's Pontius Pilate and there's Herod Antipas. There was actually a family of seven Herods, all right, over a period of about, nearly over 100 years, all right, down through the generations who governed various regions around the Middle East. Pontius Pilate, well, you know, he was just a local governor. But then above them all was the king, the emperor. Caesar. Okay. We need someone who's really got pomp. There he is. Come on, Andy. The man in charge. There he is. Okay. And we give you a really big crown. Okay. You are over everybody. So you have to come on there. And then we put that one on your head like that, okay? All of these three were watching over this lot, and you're the people, all right? You have to behave yourselves. Otherwise, these people will tell you off if you do something against God. These people will tell them off if you don't behave yourself. Got that? Everybody was looking to the higher power. You know, if he wanted to get on well, if Pontius Pilate wanted to get on well in the world, he had to make sure that Herod was his friend. And if Herod wanted to get on well in his world and not be executed for treason or whatever, he had to get on with Caesar Tiberius. He had to be a friend of Caesar. And if he wasn't a friend of Caesar, okay. So when the Jews come along and says, you're no friend of Caesar, it was a threat. Everybody was looking after their own power. And that's what you can remember about this story. It's about power. So Annas, as the chief priest, had to put down insurrections. He had to keep the zealots at bay. And unfortunately, he didn't do a good enough job for the Romans. The people loved him. He was a religious leader. And he was supposed to have the job for life. But unfortunately, he was deposed. Can I take you? And he was made an ordinary man with everybody else over here. And they took someone else. Freddie, this is your job. They got his son-in-law, Caiaphas. There you go. And put him in his place. So when you read the story and it says, you know, he was taken to Annas. Annas was the deposed leader, the deposed chief priest. His family was very well connected. And so was he. And he was very well respected. So much so that when Annas was deposed, his son took over. He only lasted a couple of years, and then the Romans wouldn't accept another one of his sons. So he put his son-in-law in. He still had the right connections. After him, he held the job for 18 years until he got chucked out. And then another one of Annas' sons, and then another one, and then another one. All of them followed. It was amazing. 5 sons, and all of them became chief priests. Such was the influence of this wonderful man in Jewish times. They didn't like him because he didn't keep the people quiet enough. Pontius Pilate, he was a horrible man. Sorry, George. He ruled harshly. Okay? In fact, he ruled so harshly, the Romans complained. When he took on the Samaritans, there was a little insurrection going on. He crushed it so much that the next one up from him wasn't Herod Antipas at the time. Sent him off to Rome. And he didn't fare too well. He was never governor again because he was too cruel. And these are the characters we have got in this story. It's a real piece of history in real time. We can date this to within 2 or 3 years because of who was where and when. And into this arena where he's got to watch out for his job because of these 3 up here. He's got to watch out for his job because of this lot over here, the Sanhedrin, who are saying, you know, well, you've got to make God your king. You know, God is our king, etc. All right? So he's got to do the political high wire of staying in control, but under the Romans. Pilate's got to keep his job under Herod. Herod's got to keep his job under Caesar. Everybody is looking to control everyone else. And into this perfect storm, Jesus is brought. Caiaphas doesn't want to lose his job. You know, he's been given this this role. He knows he's got to keep everybody happy. And he can see Jesus being a king is going to cause a problem. So he tries to nip it in the bud. Annas, his father-in-law, we think he lives next door, by the way, all right? Have the same kind of courtyard, you know, a bit like your dad living next door. Great thought, isn't it? And so they took him to Annas, who was well-respected for years and years, you know, a real good man of God, but he'd been deposed because he didn't do the job that he was asked to do by the Romans. Caiaphas respected him tremendously. So when everybody got together, because the Jews and the Romans got together and went to arrest Jesus, when they got together to arrest him, the Romans and the Jews were there, they colluded. And then they took Jesus to Annas, not Caiaphas. Presumably Caiaphas was in bed or something, you know. And Annas took him to Caiaphas. And then Caiaphas and the Sanhedrin took him to Pontius Pilate with a done deal. And the done deal was this. Let's get rid of him. He's going to be trouble. He's a king. So they took him to Pilate. Now, Pilate didn't like them. You remember I said he didn't like people, okay? He was harsh. And these were religious people at their worst at times. So they wanted to go into the... They wanted Jesus condemned, and it was coming up to Passover, and they wanted to eat Passover, and therefore they weren't allowed by law to go into Pilate's house. So they stood outside and made him come to them, which really ticked him off. Really did. So instead of colluding with them and saying, I sent the soldiers and so forth. He says, so what charge have you got? In other words, he doesn't play the game anymore. What charges have you got? Well, I find no fault in him. He doesn't deserve death. He's really just winding them up because they are being haughty. You've probably met people like that. You know, they want it all on their own terms. I used to be a teacher, and, you know, pupils used to come up to me like this, and you'd make them go and see somebody. You know, you'd make them wait outside your room, you're marking or doing something, I'm doing a crossword or whatever. You just make them wait for 5 minutes, you know, just because you know that they're going to give you a mouthful. Well, that's what this lot were like. Oh, no, we're not coming to you. We're not going to do this. No. You come to us. So Pilate is going in and out. He comes out, he talks to them, he goes back in, he talks to Jesus, he goes back out again, he talks to them, he comes back in, he talks to Jesus again. And the more he talks, the more worried he gets. Because Jesus makes it very plain, I am not an insurrectionist. My kingdom is not of this world, he says. So you don't have to worry. My servants are not going to take up swords. You don't have to worry, Pilate. Now what are you going to do? Oh. So Pilate says, hey, you know what? This is just a religious squabble. This is a power game between them. I want nothing to do with it. And they insist. And when they insist, Pilate loses power and loses control. And he says, okay, take him away and do it. Oh, we're not allowed to do that. Because the Romans, you see, they kept the power of the death sentence for themselves. So even though the Sanhedrin and Caiaphas, the high priest, and Annas, the high priest, could condemn someone to death for blasphemy, they weren't allowed to by the Romans. And if you did want to condemn someone to death, you had to stone them to death. But in the Bible, in the Old Testament, in places like Psalm 22 and so forth, We read of a different kind of death, where their bones hang out. And Isaiah 53 tells of a suffering servant. And it's only years later we discover that they're describing someone dying on a cross. So it was foretold how that person would die. And the Jews had no say over how someone died. The Romans did. And they thought this was a great punishment because it lasted days usually. And if they wanted to shorten it, they would flog someone until they were half dead, just so that they could reduce the time on the cross. Now, the first time Jesus is flogged, he's just beaten a little bit, like a misdemeanor. And Pilate thinks, I'll beat him a little bit, send him on his merry way because he's nothing to do with it. But when it comes to the cross, they beat him again, flail him, break a few, you know, try to break a few bones. His flesh is broken open. So they weaken him so much that instead of dying over 2 or 3 days, he dies over 3 hours on the cross. And yet these chapters tell us Jesus was in control. He was in control of the situation. He was in control of the conversation. He even reminded Pontius Pilate, because he said, don't you realize I have the power of life and death over you? And Jesus says, you wouldn't have any power if it wasn't for my God. Your power is given to you. And I don't just mean by Herod and by Caesar. I mean your power is given to you by God. Use it wisely. And God has that ability to allow you and I to do exactly what we want, and yet still he drives history. And he allows, and he keeps us culpable for everything we do. So, Pilate was responsible for his bit. Caiaphas was responsible for his bit. The Sanhedrin was responsible and guilty before God for their bit. Annas was responsible before God for their bit. Judas was totally responsible for his bit, even though it was God's will that he would be betrayed. God has that ability to say, just because I know it's going to happen does not excuse you from guilt. Because he made us in his image and he gave us responsibility. And that's why we have to come before God and say, I'm sorry, even though good things happened out of something. So this is the situation that's happening. All of these enemies of Jesus, were looking at power. It was about having power and keeping power. That was it. And you might have people who are against you. It's not personal. Very few people are out to get you. When people are against you, it's because they feel threatened in their power. You're taking something away from them and they don't want it. They want to keep that power. Whether it's your children, your parents, or your friends, or your boss. It's not you. It's what you stand for. And Jesus is in the midst of them, and he teaches us how to deal with people who hold what they think is power over us. And he speaks the truth in love. He does not take Pilate to task and say, you're stupid, okay? He doesn't go to Caiaphas, even when he's slapped across the face. He doesn't retaliate. He asks the question. And the very thing that they accuse Jesus of, blasphemy, is the very thing that they do when they accuse him. Did you see it in the passage? Did you? They said, when Pilate said, "Here is your king," what did they say? "We have no king but Caesar." That's a blasphemy for a Jew. Because throughout the Old Testament, before Saul and David, God was the king of Israel. When Saul became king, he wasn't king of Israel. He was sub-king under the king of Israel, God himself. God was your king. You look at the way Gideon spoke about him becoming the king of Israel. And he said, no, God is your king. So when Caiaphas and the Sanhedrin said, "We have no king but Caesar," they were denying God's inheritance. They showed their true colors. And that's what these people do. They show their true colors. And your integrity and your honesty and your love may be overcome by their clinging to power. The world may get you like it got Jesus. But the hope is this: after death comes resurrection. If you follow Christ, you may end up on a cross. But after the cross is resurrection. After the cross is eternity with your God. After the cross, there is a crown of life for those who put their trust in God. You are safe when you follow God, even though it makes you go through hardship. Isn't that good news? For you who are at work and under the cosh of a boss that doesn't like you. Isn't that good news? For you who are in a family that's at war with each other. And people are trying to control you. Isn't that good news? For you who are just trying to do your thing and serve Christ. And you keep getting knocked down, even by fellow Christians. I hope that doesn't happen here, but sometimes it does. Follow Christ, and after all of this comes resurrection. And there is joy in that, pure joy. So keep going, Christians. Despite all the circumstances, despite the bosses and the bosses' bosses and everybody else molding you and trying to keep their power, keep going. Because each of these will have to give an account of themselves to God. And so will you. And you can stand before him and say, "I delivered the truth in love as I was asked to do." And he will say, "Well done, good and faithful servant. Enter into the joy of the Lord." Isn't that good news? Let's pray together, shall we?